College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And just a few hours ago, they wrapped it up, an 11-hour Pittsburgh Planning Commission meeting ended with a vote to support a zoning package presented by Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey. So it will go on to city council, but some fallout from that, as you heard in Paul's report. Obviously, if you spend that much time, but the end of the night into the early morning hours, Paul, the vote was unanimous.
It was 8-0 with one abstention. And what that means, Larry, is when city council takes it up, it'll only require a majority to pass city council, not 2/3.
Which is a big difference, because it's challenging for many to get that. If it's 2/3, that's a much taller challenge. So what are the details? What does this really mean? Paul, well, if you met me on the street and I said, I'm a resident of the city of Pittsburgh. I'm in one of the 90 neighborhoods. What does this proposal actually mean to me?
If someone wants to build in your neighborhood a new building with apartments or condominiums in it, whatever it might be, but probably apartments, and it's going to be 20 units or more, no matter where it's at inside the city limits, 10% of the units in that building must be affordable housing from this point forward. Now, the critics say that there are not enough incentives for developers to adopt this. Some people say that it's going to hurt their industry. For example, a person who's affiliated with the Greater Pennsylvania Council of Carpenters, Steve Mazza, he was one of the people who was there, and he chose not to vote. He abstained from this. But he's on the Planning Commission. He said it hurts my membership in slowing down development. That's my opinion.
Right, because it represents the carpenters and the trades.
Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking from this point forward, I guess what we're going to be looking at, it seems likely city council will approve this. And if that is the case and they make no adjustments, you know, what areas in town are going to see a burst of development, if any? Or are developers going to look for other places to do their work outside of the city limits because of the requirements? I've heard developers say in the past, I think you have too, that you know, affordable housing, that it comes with a cost when you're building a building.
So an existing citywide incentive for developers meeting guidelines provides a tax break up to $250,000 per year for up to a decade on the assessed value by adding new developments. So they're trying to get incentives to develop in neighborhoods that haven't been really approachable in many other ways. And then people in those areas are saying it'll lower their real estate values if you have this kind of development.
Now, you say that this is something that's in place right now, this particular incentive?
Yes.
So that's interesting, because that sounds, I mean, I don't know what kind of an impact $250,000 would make in a development the size that some of the people are putting together here. But
this is why it took 11 hours to do. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm, I can.
11 hours, and you still got a unanimous vote at the end of the night, which turned into today, into the early morning hours. So, yeah, we'll continue to sift through the details. I'm sure you'll hear a lot of backlash and some support. We'll see as we go through our talk shows with Marty Griffin and Colin Dunlap, 10 to 2 and then 2 to 6 this afternoon. The federal pause on grants and loans got a pause from a federal judge.
Right.
So Donald Trump signed an executive order, as I'm sure most people are aware, pausing these federal grants and loans to everything except Social Security and Medicaid. And but they've started to add already, like Meals on Wheels, for instance, mm-hmm. some of the other programs. But a federal judge says, wait a minute. So they're going to have to sift through this. But even though the judge paused the pause, it has still caused a ripple effect.
Here's the list of what's excluded from the federal freeze, if I understand it correctly. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, small business funds, farmers, Pell Grants, Head Start, rental assistance. Okay? Those would not be paused. What they're trying to do is, I guess, review programs and grants that are awarded, and they want to weed out the ones they don't agree with. And what's going on with the judge here? The judge issued this temporary restraining order so that they can get this hearing that was called yesterday was a last minute kind of thing. The judge is going to hear, this is in Washington, D.C., is going to hear oral arguments on this issue on Monday. And then a decision will be made on an injunction, whether or not that permanent injunction or not.
So the question is, between here and there, will these organizations or different programs continue to see their funding?
That's what the White House currently says. The White House says, now, I don't know about the other programs, the ones that they wanted to have the freeze. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine why they would go against a court order like that. They'd probably continue, the money would continue to flow.
And maybe they anticipated this federal pause from the judge just so they could have time to review, and then they'll be prepared. And so I guess we'll have to wait until Monday to see what happens next.
I'm sure that the White House attorneys will go in with a lengthy and detailed list of the programs that will be protected during the pause, the spending pause. I would imagine that that would be something they would want to offer up right away, because that seems to have been, from the news reports that we have, that seems to have been the most confusion was caused about, well, what is and what isn't being frozen.
Right. And leaving a lot of people in a gray area wondering, what's my future if they're in or out? And while we're on the subject of federal pauses,
what about
last night?
The offer being made to government employees, huh?
So nearly 2 million federal employees who work remotely are being offered an 8-month buyout. They will buy you out, which will take you to the end of September, if you don't want to go back to an office. Now, there is some gray area there, too, because there are some of these employees who were hired to be remote and live in other places. So there's really no office for them to go to. So they kind of have to sort through that, too.
The main thrust of this is shrinking the size of the government. I think that the part of it about, you know, whether or not they're working or not. An article I read this morning in the Wall Street Journal says that the vast majority of government employees are back in the office. 60% of the time for the average. At least that's what it said in the article. Heck, who knows? But the memo from the Office of Personnel Management says that they're going to subject all federal employees to the enhanced standards of suitability and conduct, and it warns of future downsizing. They sent this email to the government employees. It says that those who leave their posts voluntarily get the 8 months of salary. As you mentioned, they have to choose to do so by February 6th. There's a deadline.
That's coming up quick.
Right.
That's next week.
But the idea at the White House is that 5 to 10% of government employees will accept this, take them up on it, and move on in life.
So between now and next Thursday, the clock is ticking.
And what they're aiming at is shrinking the size of the workforce. That's the big issue here.
Boy, if you're a federal employee that falls in this category, I'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
866-391-1020. It's like a game show.
For someone who's close to retirement.
Do you take the money or do you, what's the deal? 866-391-1020. If you're a federal employee who works remote, I'd love to hear from you. You don't have to give your full name if you don't want to, but curious, what do you do? It's with you wherever you go. We'll keep you posted on breaking news, weather updates, and a whole lot more in crystal clear digital quality. That's AUDACY. I'm looking out into the newsroom, Paul. I see our morning editor, Pat Septak, who listening on the way in during our birthday segment a half hour ago, I have a major correction, and I thank you, Pat, for that. I said Sarah Gilbert was on Little House on the Prairie. That was her sister, Melissa, who was on Little House on the Prairie.
And he knows this.
And he knows Sarah was on Roseanne. So that's the difference. Thanks for the correction. We want to make sure we get it all right. I thought...
Well, when I hear Gilbert and Little House on the Prairie, that's where I'm going to run up the surrender flag right there.
All right, we have new information. The FAA knew all about those drones over New Jersey.
What about this? This came out at the news conference yesterday at the White House.
Yes, the new White House spokesperson, the first for Donald Trump, is Caroline Leavitt, and she announced that the FAA knew all about those mystery drones that spooked the Northeast. You know, we talked about it. It was like daily for a while, and then it just disappeared. Nobody said anything about it. They were authorized to fly over New Jersey to conduct some type of research. No one seems more relieved than just the people in New Jersey.
Well, and I think that she also said that the problem was exacerbated by people joining in.
Right. So people who had their own drones, and now they're very sophisticated. If you've ever seen these, I'm talking about the ones you can fly on your own. How about KDK TV has a whole fleet of drones that they have a team because they have to be licensed to fly their drones.
It's revolutionary in the television business because normally getting air shots comes from a helicopter, and boy, is that expensive.
Well, the question...
And drones are so much more economical, and they're so much more flexible.
Question I have is, why didn't they just tell us this in the first place?
That's what my beef is with this.
What was the mystery?
Why not explain?
All right, another story on this Lunar New Year day is NASA will provide an update on science results from their, it's called Origins Spectral Interpretation, Resource Identification, and Security.
What the heck is that?
They are doing a asteroid, basically an inventory on asteroids, and see if we're going to get blowed up. Mm. That's not the scientific way to put it, but that's basically what they're doing. They have to track these asteroids and see if there's a chance any of these could hit the Earth.
What do you want to grow up to be, Paul? I want to be an asteroid tracker. I'm sorry, but I'm having trouble taking this one seriously.
Ellen could do it. Well, you would take it serious if there was a giant asteroid headed to impact
the Earth.
You mean
like the movie, huh?
Yes.
Right? You think that can happen?
They still say that's what happened to the dinosaurs. I mean, giant creatures walking around.
Yeah, just kind of doing their thing.
All of a sudden,
boom.
They had no asteroid tracker to let them know. And even if you do, what are you going to do about it?
That's what I'm trying to say. Bruce Willis, are we going to get him to go up in a space shuttle that's rigged with atomic bombs?
Yes.
Is that what we're going to do?
That's what we're going to do. You know, Donald Trump wants to, and we may talk about this with Colonel Jeff McCausland, like Israel has their Iron Dome defense strategy. He wants it for here, for the United States.
By the way, speaking of space and the president, he has asked Elon Musk to send up a SpaceX capsule to bring back those two stranded astronauts.
Please.
Yeah.
Send up a Tesla. Get them. That poor woman, the astronaut, she talked about being up there for 7 months already. She was supposed to be there for a week. She said she had...
Right.
She didn't have all her sense. She doesn't remember what it feels like to walk.
That's right.
Did you see that?
I did. I watched the interview with great interest. By the way, on a side note on Elon Musk... So this morning I'm going through my X feed, and I see a video at the Tesla plant somewhere in the United States, and the Teslas are now rolling off the production line and driving themselves autonomously to the loading dock where they wait to be shipped out. And I mean, they have a video of it, and it's not just one or two, it's dozens.
Like a good little robot.
It was amazing to look at it.
Tattoos are becoming more acceptable in society. A new study shows that a majority of people still think untattooed bodies overall are more attractive, especially as you get older. Younger people, tattoo artists, and people with tattoos were found to be more accepting of body art.
That's right.
And facial tattoos still have the lowest acceptance rate, so choose your spot wisely.
We talked about, the three of us have talked about this, and Aaron, you agreed. It's a generational thing.
It really is. And, you know, it is funny, those micro tattoos that are trending. I do think, you know, as you get older, and I have like one or two little micro tattoos, and there's probably one that I'm like, oh, that'll still look cute and dainty, you know, as you age. So I do think, you know, there's some validity to that. But also, you know, if you take care of your skin, could look just as great.
There are people, though, that once they get one, then they want to get another, another, another. It's almost like
an
addiction.
Then they have a sleeve.
Yeah. And then you, so tattoo this. I guess one of the facial tattoos is your one of your favorite singers.
Who?
You know who.
Post Malone.
Yes, Post Malone.
I saw a picture of Jelly Roll this
Jelly
morning.
Roll.
Yes.
Boy,
oh, wow.
He's an unusual cat.
There's not too much clear.
But he seems like a really nice guy.
He does.
They met him here at Y108.
People love him.
Said he was just delightful.
Yep.
Don't judge a person by their tattoos.
Yep.
Marty Griffin, 10 until 2, followed by Colin Dunlap, 2 to 6 this afternoon. Larry Richard with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and it's kind of like airport update morning, because next hour we're going to talk to the CEO of Pittsburgh International Airport, Christina Kasotis, along with Rich Fitzgerald. And right now we're going to take you to the Arnold Palmer Airport in Westmoreland County. Gabe Monzo is the executive director, known Gabe for a long time. How you doing, my friend?
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
You guys are working on a game plan to upgrade your airport as well, right?
Absolutely. The last time we did that was in 1998, and that was before TSA and any of that type of thing. So the upgrades were much needed to stay in business, just to stay in business the way we're doing business. Is truly a challenge, and that we needed to do this. So it's not near what Pittsburgh International is doing, but we're holding our own.
Yeah, sure. I mean, these regional airports are really important. And, Gabe, you brought Spirit Airlines, which is the first real commercial airline of significance to the region. How long ago has it been since Spirit started flying out of La Trobe?
2011 they started.
Yeah, I took one of the first flights, by the way, and went and enjoyed a nonstop flight to Florida. And I understand Spirit's doing an upgrade and adding something that this area really likes.
Yeah, you know, when people talk about commercial air service, Pittsburgh is your ticket. I mean, that's the one that has all the variety, and they do a wonderful job, and the new airport's going to be fantastic. We're sort of an alternative. You know, we have nonstop service, which is a big deal. When you get on the airplane in 2 hours and 20 minutes, you're standing in Orlando. You're not going anywhere else. You're not doing anything else. Sit down, enjoy the flight, and bingo, you're there. So, you know, those are the kind of things. A couple amenities that we have, free parking. I mean, park for free. It doesn't cost you anything. Park as long as you want. Those are all things that we have to do in order to make sure that the people are taken care of. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, aren't from the Pittsburgh area that, you know, have that Squirrel Hill Tunnel, Fort Pitt Tunnel, Robinson Town Center Drive, and they don't want to do that, and they want to have something quick. So we're happy that we got Spirit. We've flown over 3 million passengers, so that's, you know, that's 3 million people that, for one reason or another, they chose us. So, you know, you can always go to Giant Eagle and get the big stuff, but, you know, Get-Go is a good alternative for you. So I think we're the Get-Go's of airports.
Yeah, but you have a new nonstop to announce.
Oh, yeah. We got Myrtle Beach. They'll be starting up in May. And there were a lot of questions about Spirit because of their trials and tribulations, the things that they were going through. And we're extremely happy that they're sticking to their guns and they're coming back. And that's a seasonal, that's always been a seasonal type operation. And we're extremely happy they're coming back. It's a very busy flight for us. And we do good, our people do a good job with it. So we're very proud of what we have.
Yeah, Gabe, I was curious to know what the new service to Myrtle Beach is going to do to boardings on an annual basis.
Well, usually we were sort of under the gun here at the beginning of the year because of the things that they were going through. We only had one flight to Orlando, and that got cut down to 5 days a week. And the Myrtle Beach, every day, 7 days a week, you know, you're talking 170 people a day. And that brings the numbers back to where they should be, about 150,000 people flying, 200,000 a year, and we'll be back to where we should be.
We're with Gabe Monzo, executive director of the Arnold Palmer Airport in Latrobe. While we have you, do you remember Hooters Airlines? They did a nonstop.
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Yeah, I had a long conversation with my wife about trying to get them into Latrobe.
I'm guessing she was against it.
Well, you know, it was a negotiation at best. So, but yeah, I sure do remember them.
No, Gabe, as long as we're on the topic of bringing in new services, is there any hope for something else to be joining Spirit out there, like for example, Breeze Airways or Allegiant or another one?
You know, Larry, we're talking to all of them. And they're very cordial. They're very nice. They tell you, you know, oh, yeah, we're looking at, you know, your market and that type of thing. But when it comes down to brass tacks, you know, they're all here. They all know where we are. They have all of our information. There's nothing, backdoor or anything that you're doing in the shadows. It's like everything's up front. Hey, we're here when you're ready to make that decision as a corporation, we're here for you. And that's primarily what airports do. And I think the thing that people forget is how much other business airports do other than just passenger service. You know, we have two fantastic charter operations, LJ Aviation, Vino Aviation. They both move people in and out. LJ, I think it's over 150 employees. And these aren't, you know, these are pilots. And, you know, there's a lot of things. We do over 2 million gallons of fuel a year. And those are the kind of things you do at an airport that people don't realize. Just is over and above passenger service.
And one other thing you do, and you do very well, is your air shows. Do you got one coming up this year, or are you skipping this year?
We are in negotiations. How's that?
All right. You got to let me know, Gabe.
More information to come. I still remember the day we went head-to-head with the C-130, Larry. I mean, that was certainly fun.
Yes, sir. But, out of your airport, I flew with the Blue Angels for the Navy and for the Air Force, the Thunderbirds. I got both rides right out of your airport. It was time of my life.
Well, we certainly had a good time doing it, and more information to come soon.
Okay,
very soon.
Let us know, right?
You'll be my second phone call.
Okay, fair enough.
My wife's number one. You're number two.
All right, Gabe. Appreciate you, man. Good luck.
Okay, Larry. Thanks a lot. Take care of yourself.
You too. Executive Director of the Arnold Palmer Airport, Gabe Monzo. Great guy. He's been doing this a long time.
So I assume from what he's saying about the additional Myrtle Beach service is going to
7 days a week,
I guess,
starting
it's going
in
to
May.
Make up for this. We had a story not too long ago and just the last few days about bleeding cash out there. So I would imagine the boardings are going to help make up for that revenue that they were missing. Plus, you know, as he said, Spirit was down early on in the year.
And coming up in our next hour, we're going to talk to the CEO of Pittsburgh International Airport.
Did you hear the big news about the CEO yesterday?
Oh, yeah. There's big story. Big story. Christina Kasotis will join Rich Fitzgerald and I. We'll talk about what's going on. Yes, I would say that our airport is going to be the talk of the aviation world when we open this year. I keep thinking next year. No, this is next year.
Perhaps in the fall.
Plot thickens.
Yes, it does.
Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour with Paul Rasmussen, we will be joined by Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission, Rich Fitzgerald. Obviously, the former county executive for 12 years prior. But now, Rich's new role, which I find fascinating, he can use all that experience with 10 counties and the city of Pittsburgh. And I would tell Rich, Paul, one of his best hires in his tenure was CEO at the airport, Christina Cassotis, joining him now as a Pittsburgher of the Year, just announced yesterday.
It was.
For the work that she has done at the airport, and to her own admission, didn't plan to stay in Pittsburgh when she came for long, just thought she'd come, try to make improvements, and bounce. But
then a new terminal popped up on the horizon, and look what happened.
This is her 10th year this month. And this year, we're going to see the new airport and can't wait till that happens. So we're also going to be joined by Christina to talk about that. Her dad was an airline pilot, a Marine veteran, and came from New England. And under her watch, things have improved dramatically. So kudos to Rich.
I would use the word transformation at the airport.
One of the things that I didn't know Rich tuned us into, and of course he was major, you know, he was the guy that did all this too under his watch. The self-sufficiency from an energy standpoint, Pittsburgh International Airport is the only airport that has their own energy system in the world. That's how innovative they and what they have done there. I mean, there are places around the country where they just marvel at it.
And there are a lot of new airports opening around the country, which is notable because Pittsburgh is getting some attention, even though there are new places to go to the airport. Kansas City, New Orleans. Look at what happened at LaGuardia.
And in the transformation from Pittsburgh being a hub to being, you know, a destination airport where you originate your flights here. So in the 10 years, Christina has increased the number of nonstop destinations from 36 to 61. And look at all the new airlines. And you know who the number one airline is in terms of percentage of flights? Is Southwest.
Southwest. But in terms of passenger boardings, is it still American?
No, it's 27% of Southwest. American is second. And American, for those that don't know, is the residual of the old U.S. Airways, U.S. Air.
Allegheny.
Goes back to Allegheny Airlines.
And the day of the VistaJet.
Oh, wow. I love the history of aviation in Pittsburgh, too. You know, like...
Oh, so do I.
Amelia Earhart came to Pittsburgh, landed here multiple times. Charles Lindbergh. They have still hanging from the entryway there at the airport one of the original mail planes used to take mail around the region. You can imagine that. So I love that we're going to have this new airport this year. Excited about it. And we'll tell you about the details. And you'll meet actually two Pittsburghers of the year.
One thing I would like you to ask is before the airport becomes operational, will the public get a chance to just get in there and walk around?
We'll ask Christina Cassotis coming up.